Hello, it's Christania, your favourite Jamaican.
And hello from me, professional homosexual Alexis. And welcome back to Community. Once upon a time, Community was found and built around geography, village halls and town centres, or religious places of worship that acted as a central place for people to congregate. As time moved on and religious observance declined and people travelled more, where people found belonging and just a place to be began to adapt and change too. But the reality is, we're lacking behind. Around the world, social cohesion is breaking down. People become more withdrawn from those around them. We don't tend to know our neighbours as well anymore. Rates of loneliness and isolation are on the rise, both in the straight and LGBTQ worlds. A sense of belonging is vital to human psychology for happiness. We're social animals after all. It's an evolutionary need for us. So where do we find it now?
For many LGBTQ people, historically due to safety, the sense of belonging, of fitting in, has been tied to physical spaces, queer venues. But the only constant in the story of queer spaces has been change. Queer villages and hotspots have changed over time and moved around according to gentrification. As some places close, others open in new places, offering new things. In the age of the internet and social media, a lot of people find their places to fit in online. On this episode, we'll speak to three different people about communities that they helped build and find belonging.
First off is the charming and eloquent Ryan Lanji, creator of the outrageously fun queer Bollywood hip-hop night Hungama, followed by the award-winning Abby Kiwanuka, co-founder and director of Out and Proud African LGBTI, an organisation that supports asylum seekers and refugees in the UK and France. Last, but by no means least, we speak to Joshua, a member of the Manchester Village Spartans, a gay and inclusive rugby club that creates a home and community with a strong sense of belonging and drive to give back to the wider Mancunian LGBTQ scene.
All three of the people we'll be hearing from today are involved in creating and building real spaces that we can go to, get involved, and find a sense of belonging. First off, it's Ryan, who starts his story with the creation of his club night.
Hungama is a gay Bollywood queer hip-hop night that I started. I started it properly 1 year ago, but a couple of years back, I just decided to throw a Bollywood night at Vogue Fabrics. And then I just did it again for my birthday. And then I traveled back to Canada and I was listening to lots of music with my mom in the car. And I was like, I love all these jams. I'd never get to hear this. I've been in London for 8 years and I've always felt like there's a disconnect between what I do, who I was and who I am. And so I just like had a moment where I was just like really thinking about how I could merge all of those things together. And I decided to throw it at the Glory Pub in Haggerston, which is like a watering hole for all of us. Johnny Woo and John Sizzle were super, super supportive. And they're like, let's make it big and let's do like this big gay Indian wedding. And so we had Max Allen decorate the entire space. We had henna artists and I got a whole bunch of Indian appetizers. So it really felt like you were entering an engagement. And to me, it was like a marrying of all of my different facets of who I was. And the response was really fantastic. And Hungama means chaos and anarchy and like bedlam. My mom used to use it as a descriptive word when she would go to weddings afterwards. She'd be on the phone being like, it was such a Hungama. And it just always stuck in my head. So that's why I called it that. I came to London and like was chasing a dream to be a fashion curator. And I was doing that. But when you do that, you start to, especially with social media, you start to project what you think you should be doing rather than who you are. And so at that point, I was like, seeing other people and how they live their lives. And then I was like, oh, I need to be like that. I need to be here. I need to like tweet about this or talk about that in order to be a part of it. But really it was just distilling myself away from who I really was. And so once I like had my breakdown, I think everyone has a breakdown in London at some point. I came back and I was like, oh, it's so much easier if you just be who you are. And so when I started to ask myself what those things were, it was Asian, gay, fabulous, loving music. And so I just did it all at the same time and just like, I guess, operated from a place of authenticity. I mean, I think everyone during that whole Lady Gaga phase was dressing in like asymmetrical outfits, dyeing their hair and piercing whatever they could. And like, I think it made everyone a caricature of themselves. So I think we're like now coming back to a point where we are who we are and that's all we can be. And so that's when I started to connect to people more is when I just was myself.
There seems to be a recurring theme from some of the people we speak to. Thinking you have to conform to a certain characterization, straining yourself to fit into that role, having a bit of a messy breakdown with it all, and then rebuilding yourself in your own image on your own terms. I have to put my hand up, having gone through this cycle myself. Perhaps it matches up to what we're doing en masse. As our panelists in episode 1 discussed, we're going through a change period and asking more questions of ourselves. And then in episode 3, David Stewart mentions that with all change comes rebirth. Perhaps we're about to go into our next evolutionary stage. But enough of my pop psychology. Back to Ryan, who goes on to discuss what Hangama means to queer South Asian people.
I think what it does, it creates a light at the end of the tunnel. I think in our culture, you are told to be a certain way, and that is specifically in a nuclear family. If you are cis and heterosexual, like, you have to be successful, you have to be in business, you have to marry a brown girl or a brown guy, and you have to, like, make sure that the same cast as you, or make sure that the same, like, quality as you, and, like, it's just so conditioned. And, like, when I realized that I was homosexual at a very young age, I just knew that other people weren't being themselves as well. And so I feel like the best way to help queer Asians embrace who they are and celebrate who they are is to show them that you can still be South Asian on the other side. And not the other side saying that we're an other, but the other side saying, once you take this journey, like, you don't have to say goodbye to this. And, like, your parents might not understand, but they'll learn to accept you. And that takes time. And while you need that time, we have a space for you to celebrate and be cool and fun.
Ryan explains why he thinks that these spaces are still needed.
It is important to have queer spaces, but I think it's also important to, like, open that up to like-minded people. And so when I think about my party, it was first, it is a Bollywood hip-hop night, but I wanted everyone there. So I had everyone in fashion, everyone in East London. My third and biggest hangam I did, I had, like, a group of people I called the Witches, and they're, like, these Dolson Club kids who dress like Lee Bowery in New York, host the party. And it was kind of confusing for the queer Asians. They're like, why are these hosts not queer and Asian? And I was like, because they're from Poland, and they are ostracized where they're from. And here, they're being their best self. And in fact, they're being crazier than I am, and I respect them for that. And they call me, and they text me, and they invite me out every weekend. So they're hosting my party because they're my family. And I was like, they're our family now. And so it's just, like, helping people just sort of, like, have a slight shift in their opinion as to, like, creating a space where they feel safe. It's like, actually, we can all feel safe if we're like-minded.
Spreading solidarity through kindness, reaching out to different people within the LGBTQ spectrum, and forging a kinship sounded like it was an important part of Hungama's story and purpose. Ryan goes on to explain what's behind this.
I think being colored is really, like, on trend at the moment. And so, like, everyone's like, BAME. But when you think about BAME and break that down, it's Black, Asian, mixed race, and ethnic. And I was like, queer Asians haven't galvanized as much as the Black community. And, like, if you look at Asians, like, we have my friend who just visited, he's gay and Filipino. He's like, I struggle with it. He's like, I grew up thinking that I had to date Caucasian men. He's like, because I was just told that I wasn't good enough. He was like, it's weird because they'd call me a rice queen. And I was like, this is so weird. Why are people doing this? Like, I think being from Canada, we were never really taught to define other, because we were all in it together. So at school, we'd celebrate every single international holiday, like Chinese New Year, or even, like, what the Native Indians were doing. We'd, like, make bannock at school and, like, have hot lunches every month from different parts of the world. Like, we were told to respect everyone. Like, even during Ramadan, like, we were encouraged to practice it in school. And, like, it just created a unifying voice for all of us. And that's why we could never define what being Canadian is other than nice, because we're just nice to everybody.
He makes a good point. It is a cliche, but every Canadian I've ever met has been super nice.
It's just really sweet. And I was like, that needs to spread. Like, if Canada doesn't know what they're doing, because some people call us really neutral and really kind, it's like, let's just spread kindness, because it costs us nothing. I mean, the last party we did a Bolly Ball, where I wanted to take the New York ball scene, and that was really, really paramount, and it's now inspired RuPaul's Drag Race, and Paris is Burning was a really amazing documentary. I want to bring that to the queer Asians. And we had a panel of six judges, and they were all so kind. They were like, no one gave a score lower than six. And, like, no score lower than six. And everyone wanted the microphone just to tell everyone how amazing they were. And I was like, where is the shade? I was being the shadiest person there. It was really wonderful. And, like, people were competing and having fun. No one felt like they lost. They felt like they debuted themselves.
When Ryan turned up for the interview, I immediately clocked that he was wearing a jumper with the word Polari written across it. For those who aren't aware, Polari is our lost queer language. It was spoken in Britain by gay men as a way of speaking in public about illegal and illicit things, also known as our identity. It's all but lost these days, with very few speakers left. And so next we ask that with ever-increasing so-called exception and the co-option of our queer culture, does this pose a threat to our shared identity? Will we lose more?
I think that we're not at risk if we respect our culture and we teach and provide knowledge to everyone that comes after us. I think it's important not to just to look at the past and how suppressed we were, but look at it through how many obstacles we overcame. Like, you're never really judged by your failure. You're judged by your bounce back. And I think that instead of being like, we're here, you need to accept us, I think we need to walk into a room and be like, we are here and we are like you. We're human. And like, if you don't understand, we'll help you understand. And like, we'll give you the tools to be an ally.
I disagreed with his point on allyship and asked whether or not people should maybe be doing this education for themselves. Because in my personal experience, minorities are expected to educate the majority. And quite frankly, that's not something that I ascribe to, simply because of the emotional labor involved.
I think expecting people to do things is a bit selfish. I think expecting people to understand, and I'm saying this because I had to come out of the closet to my mother and my father, and they did not even understand what homosexuality was. It took me 19 years to have a voice without the internet and without knowledge. Like, there were libraries, we had to go take books out, and there was a section, like the LGBT section, that had probably 10 books there. And like, I had to do research as to what I was, like what I was about and who I was. And when I told my parents, they basically were shocked and scared, and they wanted to like try to fix it. I got angry and I like was like, you can't, if you don't love me, I'm leaving and all that stuff. But then I realized like, I need them as much as they need me. And if it took me 19 years to be able to say it, it's going to take them time to understand. And they're going to say things they don't mean. They're going to misuse terms. They're going to think that I'm something I'm not. And I was like, the only way to help them is just to hold their hand and walk. I just think getting angry is so useless. It's like sitting in a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but gets you absolutely nowhere. Look at even Queer Eye. Like, they take five gay men into the middle of America and just like throw them into a community that just doesn't really think that they exist. But within what, 4 days, they're like invited back and like, you guys are great. And it's like, just show them how great you are. You don't need to be angry. Look at journalism and at the moment, like things are written about, but the people who are writing about might not have the experience that we have. And so it's like media is being twisted as well. So it's like the only thing that we can do is sit down with someone eye to eye and have an honest conversation and ask them to ask questions. And it's okay if they get it wrong. I think if we get exhausted, it's just showing that it's just impatience on our part. I think what we need to do is just be like, okay, it is exhausting for me. So this is how you can help me spread this information I'm giving you, teach your friends, and like, galvanize them to make that difference rather than just like chastise them for not taking part.
In the context of allyship and building bridges between different marginalized groups, the conversation turns to the topic of cultural appropriation versus celebration, and Ryan's pleasure at people not from South Asian backgrounds engaging with Hungama and the Bollywood vibe.
Funny thing is that now that we've done it, and we've done it like probably 10 or 11 times now, DJ sets or parties, and like, a lot of people are like, aren't you worried about cultural appropriation? And I'm just like, no one's ever come to the party and was like, disrespectful. Everyone who's come has always been dressed amazingly. Everyone's been welcomed with open arms, and they were respecting the culture. And even if they weren't Asian, or if they were and they were dressed up, like, they were just, we were just giving like, work, yes, God, you got it. And it just like helped them feel like they can be a part of us. And we welcome them in as much as we're wanting to be welcomed. And so I think that mutual respect is so important.
What did you take from our chat with Ryan?
Ryan's perspective on life and the scene was very interesting. I admire what he has built with Hungama. I think that it's great that queer South Asians and their friends have a space to enjoy the music that they grew up on and love. Ultimately, I'm all for safe spaces. They're important, and the more we have, the better.
I hope it comes across to listeners. Ryan has got such a great and positive energy about him. So it really makes me feel hopeful when I hear from people like him who are making really positive steps to create more places where people from all sorts of different backgrounds can come together, find solidarity and friendship, and start to readdress and rebalance some of the polarization that's happening in our world right now.
Our next conversation is with Abby from Out and Proud African LGBTI, whose mission is to achieve equality and justice for LGBTI people in African countries and other countries where homosexuality is illegal.
I started the organization basically to help myself, because I would say I came in the country 2003, just running away from my country, from the persecutor. I'm lucky I was born in a military family, but in 2002 my father died. Yeah, and then he died with the protection because he was in army. I was open about myself. The family didn't like it. The community didn't like it. But of course, they couldn't do anything. So when he died with that protection. So within 1 month, I accused of promoting homosexuality in the area. Like, oh, you are the pimp. White people come in the country and then you connect them with our youngster. So they throw me in the police cell. But of course, because of my father's influence, he had friends and all that, and he gave me like three alternatives. One was to join the army, and the second one was to leave the country, and the third one was to quit being who I was, being gay. I applied for asylum, and of course it was dismissed because there used to be a discretionary test that you have to prove that you can't live as a straight man in your country. So I just absconded because I knew if I keep on signing, they would detain me and deport me as they used to do.
If someone asked me how to prove that I was a lesbian, quite frankly, I wouldn't know how to do that. But that is exactly what the Home Office was asking queer asylum seekers to do. The Home Office refused to believe queer asylum seekers and even go as far as asking them explicit questions. Although Home Office guidelines tell interviewers to avoid asking questions about sexual preference. Earlier this year, the European Court of Justice ruled that psychological tests on asylum seekers breaks EU law because it infringes on the human right of privacy and dignity. Obtaining protection through the asylum process is extremely difficult, and for an LGBTQ plus person, applying on the basis of their sexuality or gender identity, the journey can be extremely traumatic and invasive, with no guarantee of success. Abby continues to explain what happened once he was arrested.
So in 2009, basically, I was arrested and I was charged about working by deception when I'm not supposed to work. Yeah. So they put me in prison for 6 months. I was there for 3 months and they let me out. And then I submitted another fresh claim and they detained me. But when I was in detention, I experienced a lot of things. There are many people who are being deported on daily basis from Uganda, from African countries, and it was just so bad. So I managed to come out, and when I came out, I started to expose the detention centers because what was in our community was more or less that, oh, Uganda is so bad. Uganda is so bad, they're persecuting gay people, but they didn't think about what England was doing. England was deporting people who were running away from persecutor, come here, and then they get them, and then they take them back. But no one was aware of it. And no one even was aware of what was happening in the detention center because I was constantly abused by the official, the guards. It was so bad that I couldn't believe that it was happening in England. So when we started exposing the detention center, the Guardian newspaper sent some kind of spies and all that undercover, and then they started documenting it and then started outing what was happening, which was good. But what I realized that most of the detainees were so scared about the system. They couldn't come out and say, yeah, this is happening in detention center, because they were so scared that if they talk about it, the government is going to get them, take them back. And it was so difficult, so I had to do it myself.
And so if you had been deported as a gay man, what would that have been like?
What I would have done was to join the army, because my father was in the army, and I was sponsored by the President of Uganda for my education because of what my father did in the Liberation War. I was 100% joining the army, because in the army, you can be who you want to be. No one is going to persecute you, of course. No one, the mob won't come to you. You've got guns and all that. So right now in Uganda, there are many gay men in army, in the church, and I profile as well. But of course, no one will touch on them because they don't move in the downtown, like less deprived areas. They don't. Mostly I was in black gay community, but most of them, they were in closet. Of course, I would say most of my friends were in closet. Most were in straight relationships, because there were that element of like, how am I going to stay in the country? How? I'm not a student. I might be in family, like Article 8. So the best way is to get a woman and then marry them. And then after 5 years, so break out and then start living my life. It was more of how am I going to stay in the country. The white one who I had were not that many. And they were okay. I had good friends who supported me, actually, who taught me and everything, immigration law, because when I was in prison, what I understood that I had to learn something about law, immigration law, which I did for the months which I was there. And it helped me a lot, because when I went to the detention center, I used it and helped other detainees as well to come out, basing on those small knowledge which I had acquired in the prison. So the gay community, in England after 2009 when I applied for the second time. They tried. I've got a few friends who tried to help me. But again, I've got other friends who wanted probably to use you for their own benefits, like kind of some of the charities in England, actually. Because you ask me why I started the organization. Those are some of the white LGBTI charity that claims that they are helping asylum seekers. So I realized that when I phone these people, they say, you're going to say this about Uganda. I said, no, everyone knows about Uganda. Uganda is the horrible country to be gay. But I want to talk about England and the detention center, what's happening in the country. And I said, no. It's like you're going to upset our funders. I said, well, then I can't say anything because this is what I want to talk about. And you want me to talk about Uganda. You don't want me to talk about England. And that's why we started up our group, our African LGBTI group, because we knew our problems. We knew no one was going to tell us to stop what we are doing. We are the leaders. And of course, we used to go to demonstrate, the injustice in detention center. But this white organization, like, I think they're after money, they used to say that, so don't show your face. Don't speak out. Hide your face, voice and everything. And I say, well, how am I going to be in the shadow and then I start campaigning? How am I going to challenge the religious preachers in Africa, the pastor same powers? If you guys, you are in front of me, let me speak for myself. Just come out and let's be who we want to be. Let's challenge the homophobias in Uganda, in England, and anywhere.
What do members of the group get? So like when they come to you, what kind of help do you provide for them, for refugees?
Because the system is so difficult, we've got some lawyers who are so good, our friends. What we do is we tell them how the system is, and then we connect them to the legal professionals, one of the best lawyers we've got. It's kind of impossible because there are some people you meet and they are cool. I mean, and there are others who kind of discriminate you. I mean, it's like same group, there's some discrimination as well. First, in black communities, I've got friends in England. Because I'm so interested in activism and all that, supporting other people, I've got other friends who are here just to have fun, like to live. They don't want any activism. If someone get deported, they are not bothered. They are not concerned. And I've got other people who pretend that they are super gay. Because we've got like super gay, not gay enough, and gay in African community. If you have like one partner, then definitely you are not gay enough. If you go like five partners, then you are super gay. And if you got no partner, then some say, well, you are not even gay if you have no partner in African context. Like. And that's so bad because it pushes people in the community to look for partners to fit in their community that, yeah, they are gay. And with some white people, they think they've got right to have you whenever they want to have you because you are from Africa. And I had a friend who started a conversation with someone, and then when they turned them down, they racially started abusing them, like, I was helping you, helping you to love you. I mean, it was confusing. Why would you help me to love me? You help me for what? It doesn't make sense. So there are some kind of probably discrimination among the LGBT community in Britain. I've faced it, and I have seen many people facing it. We support a lot of LGBT people in, as I said, in England. Yeah, we've got members from Manchester, Birmingham, I think Leeds. We contact them. What we do is we provide them transport, like, because it's so expensive. I mean, to jump on a train from Leeds. What we do, we give them transport and food. And if they want to stay over, I mean, we get friends, we've got apartments, and then stay over. And if there's something we need to do, we check on them. We visit them once a while so that they feel good, like they feel they've got friends. And another thing, we look for some organization in those areas, like LGBT organization, and then we connect We connect them to them, to support them, and we keep in contact with them. Not only in England, we do it in France, in Netherlands, and in Sweden as well. So we make sure that anything which happens, we tell them. If we go in a function, we tell them. In a party, we tell them. If they have no transport, we transport them. And the fact that we don't have no even funding, like we just, as members, because most of us, we've been granted asylum, we are refugees, most of us work, so we contribute. It's not like, sir, we've got some funding to help this. No, no, no. It's kind of like self-help group that if we are in the pub and we know our friend, they don't have no money, I mean, we buy them drinks. And we don't expose them that, oh, we are buying you, to feel ashamed in the community that, oh, you're skinned and all that. We make sure that, yo, you need something to eat, you need something to drink. And we cater for them. It's like a big family that we had a girl from Uganda. She was detained for 6 months. It was so expensive to go to Yazwood every week because I think it's like £70 every week. But we had to go there because we learned that she was cutting herself. And then I went to her and then I spoke to her and said, no, I was in prison for 6 months, in detention for two months. Stop cutting yourself. Because what is... you are going to be let out. You are going to be released. You can damage your body. You can do it. And then they let you out. And then you keep your scars. So stop doing it for us. We are doing whatever it takes to see that you get out. And then eventually after 6 months, came out. Now she's okay. She's having fun and all that. So it's like a big family.
I'm so glad Abby was able to come and speak to us and share his story. He's had one hell of a life. I absolutely admire his resilience and the fact that he has chosen to help other LGBTQ plus asylum seekers and is using his voice to shed light on the treatment he received while in the detention centre. It takes a lot of courage to be outspoken. Abby is another great example of someone who has built a tangible space that is needed, especially with the fact that he's giving a helping hand to others in need. Uplifting others is exactly what community is all about.
Hearing Abby talk about the persecution he faced in Uganda for his sexuality really brings the horrific stories you hear home. Nobody should have to face this danger and persecution for their sexuality. But what makes me really angry and ashamed is the way that our government here in the UK treated him and continues to treat other LGBTQ people, when the fact of the matter is that it was Britain's empire that exported homophobic laws across the world. So beyond the just common decency of offering a safe place of refuge to the persecuted, but considering that the legacy of empire, our empire, is what has helped create these situations, and then our government washes their hands and won't act responsibly or compassionately, it's honestly a shame on all of us. After hearing his story, I'm embarrassed that I've not really ever done anything to put pressure on our government to take action. But it's also not just in African countries. We have literal gay concentration camps happening in Russia and Chechnya. And again, our government isn't doing anything. And while some groups have protested and taken action, en masse as LGBTQ people, we've not stepped up and stood up enough. Literal world wars have been fought over this. But because it's happening to LGBTQ people, to gay men, to women, to trans people, it's just being swept under the carpet. We shouldn't stand for that. In the Get Involved section of our website, we'll be collecting and linking different ways that we can all get involved in this fight and take action.
Now a change. We look at how belonging can be linked to interest and activity. Founded in 1998, the Manchester Village Spartans are one of the world's oldest gay and inclusive rugby clubs. We speak to one of their members named Joshua about how the club offers a community and builds a sense of purpose and belonging. It's worth noting that they aren't exclusively gay, with about 75% of the membership identifying as gay and bisexual. 25% are heterosexual. Joshua starts by giving a background to the club.
We were about 135 members. We have our own clubhouse in Sale, and it's a really great collaborative environment for brand new players and also competitive players to get to play rugby. Well, I think we're quite unique, actually, that probably the majority of our players are not typical rugby players, and that we do have some players who've had careers before. We've had some players who have come from really quite good rugby backgrounds playing at county level at various clubs and counties around the country. There's also a strong group of students who perhaps played at school, fell out with rugby for some whatever reason, and then come back to it through the Spartans because we're so sort of welcoming, and we've set up to make sure that happens.
We asked why people who had never played rugby before decided to take up a sport later in life and join.
We're really, really heavily involved in our local community anyway. So if people are out on Canal Street in Manchester, or, you know, famous gay village, people will see us out. We regularly go out in our polo shirts and as a team. So it's you know, we're clear we get on well. It's a big social gathering as well. And I think we've had a lot of players who've seen us out, who've seen us in working in the community, and then come and join for that reason. But also, I think we're well known in the area for being competitive. We have a really strong first team that play in our local third division. And we have coaching that can mean that players can play at that ability. And we also have a really professional setup. So we have team physios and we have a team doctor, which if you looked at other teams in our area, perhaps you wouldn't have that level of support, certainly not beyond the first team. Whereas our first and second team and our development squad all get access to that sort of ability. And I think we're known as a really friendly side. So we often have local teams come and support us. We go and support other teams as well. And I think through that, you know, people find out who we are and then come and join us.
But the Spartans don't just look after those within the immediate club. They have a strong remit to give back into the wider gay scene of Manchester.
Of course, the majority of our players go for a pint after a match on a Saturday. So we have two sponsor venues on Canal Street, so Bar Pop and Via, both major venues in the middle of, in the heart of the gay village that we attend. We go to almost every Saturday. We also host events there. We hosted a drag brunch, and we do also our Easter bash, which is like a performance we put on every year for the local community. But then also lots of our Spartans volunteer in the community. So I'm a village angel. I'm a street safety patrol that we do in the gay village that's very visible. We also appeared in a lot of community videos, things like appearing in Lad Bible and Unilad, sorry, all that kind of, those sort of Bible videos, you've been in a few of them. And also, we're prominent at Pride. We make sure we have a big entry into Manchester Pride every year. And we've also taken to attending a couple of local Prides, the smaller ones like Salford and Didsbury Pride, to make sure that we're not just there for the drinking. We are there also to support our own community. And I think, you know, you'll see Spartans at the vigil at the end of Manchester Pride, you'll see Spartans at various community events. And we always make sure that we're wearing our Spartans polos to make sure that that visibility is there. And people can see us and people feel empowered to come up and say hello and talk to us and ask about rugby. And that's all part of our ethos in terms of working with our community, because we're nothing without our gay village behind us. The LGBT Foundation is a national LGBT charity, but it's based in Manchester, is one of our sponsors. So we give them advertising space on our kit. We also promote their events for them. And I think that's just a natural sort of fit there, that our players then go and volunteer with them. We also have got some en masse volunteering opportunities as well. So, for example, we supported Manchester 10K and Manchester Marathon by providing marshals through Sale Sports Club, which is our clubhouse. So we make sure we do things en masse and also individually.
We took the opportunity to ask a bit more about life in Manchester's gay village and how the Spartans fit into it.
I think Manchester's gay village is diverse and it's really welcoming, it's really friendly. I've been to a lot of gay scenes around the country and internationally, and for me it's certainly one of the most closely knit. The village staff know each other, the regulars in the village know each other. Because it's all set out on one long street, it is very close knit, people talk to each other. And I think the Spartans, as a big community group, need to fit into that. I mean, we have 135 members, so that's a big group when we go out. And we patronise our sponsor venues, because it's important to do that. But also, we then go for a night out afterwards, and people will see Spartans out. So we fit into it as both as a rugby club, as a symbol of that diversity, because we have players who from all sorts of backgrounds, and that sort of fits well with the village and having lots of different people there. And Manchester's Gay Village is very active in terms of its volunteering and fundraising, and that's what we support as well. So a number of our players were unfortunately affected by the bombing at Manchester Arena last year, and we made sure to go out and do a joint fundraising effort in our kit with the LGBT Foundation. And we received support from the community, from the police and from the ambulance service in doing that, to raise money for those people who were affected by it, because our own players were affected by it, because whilst they're all Spartans, there are also many other things as well.
What Joshua mentions here was the tragic bombing of Manchester Arena in May 2017, which took the lives of 22 people and injured a further 250.
It's a massive confidence boost. Players inevitably get fitter and more confident in their abilities through the playing the sport, but having that support network of 135 Spartans who, you know, are very friendly, are close-knit, that's going to build your confidence, especially with people who are new to Manchester. We have a lot of people moving in, either students coming into the city or people moving here for jobs. It's a massive growing economy in Manchester, and we have lots of young professionals arriving in the city, and to have immediately dropped into this community, not only a community in Manchester, because we have our Spartans, but then also if they play for our second team, they'll go and play other teams around the country. So I went down and supported our second team in Glasgow, and just to see that community, that you turn up and you play immediately, that's going to be a confidence boost. It's going to build a friendship network almost immediately. So I think it means a great deal to our players. The best thing I've seen is that we have a project called Try for Change, which is a collaboration between Comic Relief and the RFU.
Sorry, a little bit more rugby jargon. RFU is the Rugby and Football Union. It's the governing body of British rugby. You're also going to hear reference to Twickenham, a huge 82,000-seater stadium, which is the home and spiritual centre of English rugby.
It meant that we were able to support some players who perhaps wouldn't have been able to play rugby before. And it ended up with myself taking three of our newer players to Twickenham. For the final game of the Six Nations last year, we had front row seats to watch England play Ireland. Incredible experience for anybody who's a fan of rugby, but for people's first ever live game to be in the front row at Twickenham. And then what was incredible was that we were then invited to play a game of touch rugby on the pitch at half time in front of 85,000 people, minus the people who went to the toilet and the bar, obviously. And for one of our players, that was his debut. That was the first game of rugby he'd ever played, and that was at Twickenham at half time. In front of all those people. Another player, I remember he suffers from quite severe anxiety, and we managed to support him through that, you know, talking through what's happening next, what he'd be doing, exactly what was happening. And, you know, for his experience of rugby two playing on the pitch at Twickenham with that severe anxiety was incredible. And to see the smile on his face was definitely one of the most rewarding parts of being a Spartan.
In the 90s, when the Spartans, along with many other LGBTQ sports clubs, formed, homophobia was a big issue in sports, and it still is in some places, let's be real. But as that dies out, will gay and inclusive sports clubs still be needed?
The Spartans were set up a long time ago, as were the Steelers, to break down those barriers in rugby, and I think that work has been done. There's an incredible work with that. The RFU are incredibly supportive of certainly our team and many other teams around the country. But there are still stereotypes in place, and I think some of those stereotypes come not only from the cis straight community, but also from our own LGBT community in of what rugby was or what rugby is. And I think breaking down those barriers, for me, I've played rugby for a very long time. Rugby is an incredible game based on respect and joint effort, and I think it's a massive loss for any member not to be able to see that. And I think if there are stereotypes and prejudices in place from our own LGBT community that prevent them from engaging this incredible game, that's a problem. So we do amazing work in breaking down those stereotypes. And then also from another point of view, you know, about gays not being able to play rugby. Absolutely, we can play rugby. We play at a very high level in the Northwest. And we have a lot of respect from other teams for what we do for the sport. And I think it's going both ways. That's what's so important about Spartans.
As a fellow rugby player, I can echo Joshua's point about the immediacy of camaraderie and friendship that one can get, and a sense of belonging that comes with a sports club. In school, I enjoyed playing the actual sport of rugby, but couldn't put up with the level of homophobia I faced and walked away from the sport for many years. Eventually, I returned to it in my early 20s through gay and inclusive rugby club, the King's Cross Steelers, which you heard mentioned by Joshua in his interview.
I guess it's similar to how we've built a community and friendship circle through AZ Hub, just without the mud.
The joining thread between all three of these interviews is how important this sense of belonging, of identifying as part of something more than just yourself, is to our happiness. Everybody, along with their LGBTQ identity, holds something other, something else about them. They were gay, they were lesbian, they were trans, and something else, and found solidarity in that by combining the two. What I found really inspiring was that all three got involved. Two founded brand new places for LGBTQ people to go, and the third helped continue a legacy
and bring new gay and bisexual men to sport. I found it really uplifting. Great things can happen when people get involved and take real-world action.
Our question to you, the listeners, is what are all the different parts of your identity? What are all the things you're interested in or the subjects and issues that you care about? Are they all being met? Whether you want to dance, bake, hike, improve social justice, play a sport or sing, get involved and help build your community. For transcripts, full episodes and our ever-expanding Get Involved section, go to our website, communitypod.com. You can get in touch with us on all the socials at communitypod and by using the hashtag QMMUNITYpod or by emailing us at communitypod@gmail.com.
You can find us, and importantly, tell all of your friends to find us, on your favourite podcast app, just by searching Community. And please, rate and leave us a lovely 5-star review. Otherwise, we'll come for you. It'll help other people find us and spread a bit of love. Cheerio!